Loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts.
He gets it over to the doctor. Tie ball game. Here's a shot. Julius.
He scores!
Anthony for three. Bang! That one goes down and the game is tied.
20 seconds.
Here's Durant moving on Tucker. He turns. He shoots. Yes!
Talking Knicks, Nets, and all things across the association. This
five,
is Pick and
four,
Pod on
three,
WFUV
two,
Sports.
One.
Hello and welcome to Pick and Pod. Today we are going to be covering Knicks, Nets, and everything that happened around the NBA. We had some pretty controversial things happen this week, so excited to get into that. My name is Mariana Gallagher. Joining me today is Izzy Randanzo and Bradley Byrne. How are you guys today?
Doing pretty well. I had four classes today, so that was a little bit tiring, but no classes tomorrow, so excited for that.
Doing well. The NBA's back. Feeling good. A little bit sick, but, you know, can't stop me from talking ball.
Can't win them all. This is a great transition. Neither can the Nets win any, really. Most recently, the Nets lost to the Celtics 148-111. Celtics recording an 80.8% EFG percentage, which is the highest in NBA game history. Not a good look for the Nets at all. What are your guys' just kind of thoughts about how that game went and how their season's going, really?
I feel like the Nets are not playing winning basketball. I feel like it's fair to say that they're not.
Yeah.
Incredible analysis.
Yeah.
I think that they fumbled on all four of the draft picks in 2025. I really think they could have done a little bit better drafting four guards. Really,
yeah.
Isn't what I had in mind, but it's kind of a sad way to start off the episode. We're talking about the Nets.
Well, I thought that maybe if we start this way, then as we talk more, it'll kind of get more uplifting.
And on a good note,
yeah.
Yes.
That's true. But,
they're in a kind of a dogfight with the Pacers and the Kings for the worst record in the league. I know that when they got Michael Porter Jr., they kind of thought that that was going to be what turned them around, and it's clear to see that it's not. They have some good rookie talent, but what do you guys think it'll take to actually turn this around for the Nets? If not this season, just in the future.
I think because it is such a new team and these players are so young, it's going to take a decent amount of time for them to develop together and to build, you know, kind of that level of chemistry that gets teams to win games. So I feel like time is just of the essence for this team. I mean, they have the building blocks,
yeah.
They have the tools to
yeah.
make it happen. It's just not going to happen in one season. So I definitely see the potential, but it's not going to happen overnight.
No, I totally agree. And I think they have, like you said, Izzy, they have such good kind of baseline players right now that are really working for them when it comes to making plays happen, but not working for them when it comes to preventing plays from happening to them, if that makes sense.
It's a great way to put it.
Yeah. So, yeah. Bradley, do you have any?
Honestly, I really have nothing. So I'm surprised that Michael Porter Jr. wasn't traded at the deadline. I think if Michael Porter Jr. wasn't on this team, they'd probably have, I'd say, like, 8 wins, maybe 9. Because there have
yeah.
been some games like Michael Porter Jr. is the reason why they've won some of these games, so.
Oh, 100%.
No, 100%.
I'm actually surprised that, and they probably could have gotten a decent haul for him, too, because he's actually played decently well, but.
I feel like he's been going off.
I know.
This
they
season.
Could have gotten probably maybe like a 20-28 first round pick from, you know, like a mid-tier contender. Like
yeah.
Maybe,
know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that I have to say about the Nets. They should have traded Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah. I don't know. I do think that he's kind of holding this team together, though. I think what they need to kind of just go into that next level is a player that Michael Porter can bounce off. I think that he is more developed than other people on this team, and I think that he can't just be relying on this rookie talent to kind of bring up the Nets offense. So I think that's a starting place for a new Nets team. But like you said, let's kind of build into something more exciting, something maybe better. Let's talk about the Knicks win over the Spurs last night, or I guess yesterday afternoon. because it was a 1 o'clock game. It was weird really for MSG. Strange. I know. And such like a marquee game. I mean, the Spurs have been on an 11 game run, actually like won every game in the month of February, but the Knicks seemed just kind of like took them down a level. They had a 26-2 run in the first half. What do you guys think this Knicks team proved with a win over such a powerhouse team as the Spurs have been recently?
No, and as a Knicks fan, I won't be biased here in my analysis, but I honestly don't think the Spurs are championship contenders. Yes, they won by 25, but I just don't see the Spurs. They can come out of the West. I just don't see them winning a championship. Yes, this is a very good game, but at the end of the day, I do think that I could probably name three teams that take over the Spurs in the West. So I'm happy with this win, but this was just a really bad game from the Spurs. I'm not going to overreact on their worst loss of the season because every team has that one bad blowout, and I think this is it for the Spurs. But, yeah.
Yeah.
I still just don't – no, just no knock on the Spurs, but I just don't think they can win the championship, let alone come out of the West.
Interesting. I feel – I'm going to go down a different road. I think they can make it out of the West. I mean, it is – kind of, you know, like a newer, you know, like their momentum is a little bit newer, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
As compared to like OKC, obviously it's going to be a little bit different, but I really like how they're playing. Obviously, I'm a big Wemby fan. I love what he's doing. Generational talent right there. That's my guy. But yeah, I think they can make it out of the West.
I can elaborate if you want why I don't think.
Sure. Let's go bar for bar, Bradley. Yeah.
First off, the Spurs 3-point shooting is awful. Like, in the playoffs, if you go consistently shooting under, like, 30% from three, you're not going to win any games. But the one thing that inside the NBA actually broke this down perfectly before the game, the way the Spurs play defense, they just have Wemby sitting in the paint like a safety, right? And all you need to do is take Wemby out of the paint, and it's an easy bucket every single time because the Spurs have really no defensive wings. They just have a bunch of defensive guards, you know, like Stephon Castle, Dylan Harper, players like that, Devin Vassell. And there's a reason why Mikal Bridges had a really good game yesterday, because when you take Wemby out of the paint, it opens up an easy bucket. So Mikal constantly cuts to the paint because there's no Wemby. And obviously, he's going to... Mikal is 6'6". I'm not going to say the other height, you know, when I'm going to avoid it. But that's why he was able to play so well, because, you know, Stephon Castle, Devin Vassell are all smaller guards. Yes, they're good at defense, but they're also smaller. So any team that has good wings that could shoot, you know, like an OKC, like a Boston, you know, teams like that that have good wings that can play ball. Even Kate Cunningham, you could call him a wing as well because, you know, he's 6'6". And I just think the Spurs don't have any defensive wings. Yes, Keldon Johnson's good, but he's also the sixth man. I really think that I think he should be in the starting lineup just because they need that defensive wing presence. And that's my reason why I don't think the Spurs could come out of it, just because the way they play defense and their 3-point shooting has just been really bad.
No,
it takes Wemby. If Wemby goes 3 of 9 from three or something like that, the Spurs won't win a game.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think a lot of what you're saying is totally accurate, especially when it comes to Wemby in and out of the paint and how kind of that team responds to his presence on the court. I think that he's carrying a lot of the weight when it comes to that defensive energy just because he's so freaking tall. But kind of more to what Izzy was saying about how I do think that games like this show the deficiencies of a team, and I do think that the Spurs are a kind of team that can respond to looking at what their holes are and filling them. Mm. So I think that by the end of this regular season, a lot of those holes are going to be shown, especially when it comes to teams in the East that I arguably think are just inherently stronger than the West. I think that winning the West with the current lineup is going to be more attainable for a Spurs team like this than maybe if they were playing in the East against a Knicks team or a Boston team. I think that kind of what you're saying would be more of a concern, but I think they'll have maybe not a lot of pressure when it comes to
the
West.
It's also just experience at the end of the day.
Yeah.
because the Pistons lost in the first round last year, but they also had no experience. And I just think the Spurs are a year ahead. Like, the Rockets last year were a year ahead of schedule when they lost to the Warriors.
Yeah.
I think the Spurs this year are that team where it's like, they're a year ahead. Give them, you know, one playoff series, you know, to see how it goes. And then next year, I think they'll do better. I just don't think it's their year. I think they need one more year of, or just one playoff series under their belt. They haven't played a playoff series with this team. So I just want to see how they'll respond to, against, you know, because assuming that the standings stay the same, they'd probably play, let's say, the Suns. I think they could probably beat the Suns, but then assuming that Houston beats the Lakers, you go up against Houston, and I don't think the Spurs could beat Houston because Kevin Durant in the playoffs is one of the best players we've ever seen. So
yeah.
I'm very fascinated to see how San Antonio goes. I think they either get blown out in their first series just because of the inexperience, or they go to, like, the Western Conference Finals. I just don't think there's an in-between with them.
Yeah. No, I accept that. I see that.
I see it.
Yeah.
I'm just still going to be rooting for the Spurs, though.
Oh, 100. I'm a out of the West?
Yeah. Honestly, me too. I just don't like OKC.
Me neither. Oh, my gosh. Oh. We could do an entire episode about that, genuinely.
Speaking of OKC.
Oh, goodness.
Knicks play OKC this week. OKC is still top of the West, but SGA is out with an abdominal injury. You think that carries on into this?
She's out?
That's rumor on the street.
Hasn't he been out for a few games? A decent amount.
He just played against Denver.
Oh.
He did?
He's back. I'm going to that game Wednesday, actually, and I'm kind of dreading it just because I hate the way Shea plays. I hate the foul beating, the flopping, like... I said this on the last podcast I was with you, Izzy. That's why I don't think James Harden should have won his MVP. I don't think Embiid should have won his MVP.
Definitely not Embiid.
I don't think SGA should have won his MVP. That's why I'm dreading going to... Obviously, OKC is arguably the best team in basketball, but I'm dreading the way OKC plays. Like, I went to Knicks Sixers for WFAV as well. By the way, shout out Joe Henry and Bobby Chafferdine for giving me the opportunity.
Shout out our guys.
5 minutes, it's just Embiid's flopping and flailing. And then when he gets called for a foul, he complains to the refs. And I hate the way, you know, SGA plays and Embiid plays. So that's just my one.
I could go on for hours about how much I hate Embiid as well. But we don't have hours, unfortunately. But I would go on. So let's kind of move on to around the league. We've brushed on this Pistons team. They're 45-14. Right now they have the second best defense in the league. What are your guys' thoughts on how Cade Cunningham is playing, especially out of the All-Star break?
I'm liking what he's doing a lot. I mean, throughout this season, he's proven himself 100%. Like, if you would have told me last year that the Pistons would be number one in the East, I would have been like, okay, I don't believe you.
Right.
But obviously, like, we see how they're playing, and they're doing really well. I like what Cade is doing. I think running, like, I feel like it's going to be between him and Jokic for MVP.
Okay.
I actually disagree with that. I take Jaylen Brown over Cade Cunningham in the MVP conversation. Just because...
Let's talk about this
just
more.
Because I'm a Knicks fan, too. Just because the MVP, I think this season will be about elevating your team to a place where nobody expected. Mm. I think going to the season, people probably had... It was more reasonable to think that the Pistons would be the one seed than Boston being the two seed. Because obviously, you know, Tatum may be coming back soon. It's just...
Have you guys heard the theory?
Yes.
The Ides of March, he might be coming back on March 15th. That'd be sick to come back.
We'll see.
But if Jokic becomes ineligible, I'd probably give it to Jaylen Brown. Just because, you know, elevating your team to a place where nobody expected them to be. Like, people were saying this was a gap year for Boston where they're just tanking and stuff like that. But
that's certainly not the case.
I mean, I've been impressed with Jaylen Brown.
Yeah. I am too. As a Boston fan, I am totally biased, but I think that this team has shown that they are efficient even without a Tatum player, you know? I think that there's a lot going for this team, especially with Tatum on his way back in. I've heard rumors that he's coming back this week.
I have too. I just saw that on Twitter.
Yeah. So that could be big. I kind of almost wish that they would wait.
I was just going to ask you, as a Boston fan, what do you think about the, like, not rush to come back, but it's like, is it necessary for Tatum to come back, do you think?
I don't think. I think that right now there's like a pretty good momentum for this team without him. I do think that maybe if they want to make a playoff run, it makes sense to want him to be out there so that they know their rhythm when it comes to these new players and Tatum playing amongst them with like guys like Vlahovic, guys like that. So I do see, as if I can name more, I can name more. but I do see wanting him to come back just to see how that works. When I said I wanted them to wait, I just meant to the Ides of March, to that day. I wanted that prophecy to come true.
So in like less than 2 weeks, yeah. Essentially. Okay. Yeah. But it's like, if it's like this week or next week, does it really matter?
No,
like it's kind of the, it's a, it whatever.
Yeah.
Just days type of difference, but I don't know.
Yeah.
You go.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't insert him once the playoffs start, just because it'd be zero chemistry. So I'd probably say, I'm looking at their April schedule. They have, he should come back. I'd push it till April, honestly.
I think throwing in, 7 to 8 minutes a game starting now, just to get that, real scenario practice of what it's like to have Tatum out there with actual players is not a bad idea. Going from now until the playoffs, mm-hmm. and then just slowly building that up until the playoffs come, just to make a run. So I see that. I also trust, I would trust Joe Mazzulla's judgment any day. Mm-hmm. I would trust him with my life. So
that's a little.
I think that this Boston team knows what they're doing when it comes to welcoming Tatum back. I also think that there's no way that Tatum would let himself
mm-hmm.
in a situation that he doesn't think that his Achilles could take.
That's a really good point. I feel like it's not the Celtics being like, Jason, we need you.
Yeah.
It's a lot of him being like, no, I want to play. Because he loves the game. Yes. It's for the love of the game.
But you can tell that he's restless.
Yes. But yeah. I mean, he has, he's been resting a lot. He's mm-hmm. been obviously doing some physical therapy. Like, we saw him dunking a few months ago, honestly.
Yeah.
So I feel like if it's not the Ides of March, I feel like it'll be very shortly after.
Yeah. It'll be soon. Excited for that day. You'll never stop hearing from me when that day comes. All right. Kind of just to end this show off, I thought maybe we should talk about that little incident that happened between Lu Dort and Jokic a couple days ago.
Oh, yes.
So from what I gathered, there was kind of a hip checking from Lu Dort to Jokic in the fourth quarter of their game against OKC. And Jokic is usually a pretty clean and calm player, was not that way at all. There's this one clip where you can see his eyes and you can see the actual redness in them. What do you guys think about how that whole thing played out? Kind of just initial reactions to Jokic turning evil.
It's just another instance of wow, we do not like OKC.
Yeah.
And we do not like their players.
Yeah.
You could see in the clip, whatever the tape, the second after Lu Dort was called out, he literally was like, what? What did I do? It's like, you know what you did.
Yeah, we were all there.
We were all watching it. We saw. And one thing I want to mention is that I've never seen Jokic that way.
No.
I've never seen the absolute, ferocious intensity in his eyes.
It was actually, radiating.
It was kind of, I was, a little bit frightened. We've never seen him in that sense.
This guy who just cares about his horses.
Oh, always the horses.
Always the horses is actually put off by this OKC player. It does make me kind of have joy that real rivalries do still exist in 100%. The NBA.
Alive
it's not just teams against each other. OKC and Denver do actually hate each other. And I do love when there's a burning rivalry happening there.
No, definitely. And especially since Jokic already missed I wrote it down right here. Yeah, he's missed 16 games already. So if he misses two more, then that's it. He's done.
Yeah.
And plus, he could have gotten really, really hurt.
Yeah.
You know, that's just, obviously, you could call it overreaction because you know, there's OKC fans probably think it's an overreaction, but at the end of the day, that was a dirty play.
Yeah.
Just petty. And like, no, above all.
If I was Jokic, I probably would have done more than just grab his jersey, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
But I just don't like Ludo. I think his defense is overrated. I think he's a dirty player, and I got nothing else to say. It's just, that's a dirty play, and
it was.
I think he should be suspended for a game, just because if that's Draymond Green, he's suspended for the rest of the year, without a doubt.
Honestly, that's Dort really correct.
But Lou Dort does the same things Draymond does. It gets away with it because it's OKC.
Mm-hmm.
If that's Draymond Green, he's getting suspended, fined, and whatever. So yeah. I think he should be suspended just for a
he
game.
He did get ejected, so at least it wasn't like the refs were like, oh, what happened?
They were there. They saw.
Yeah.
Like we saw, they saw too. Probably didn't have the same reaction that we did.
No, I know. Like, that was crazy though. I wonder if in their heads they were like, wow, that was wild.
That was
they
insane.
I would love to pick like a ref's mind and be like, what's one time that you saw a play and you were like, wow, I'm telling my wife about that when I get
what's
home.
What's going down?
Well, that has been it for us. I am Mary Hannah Gallagher, joined by Izzy Randazzo and Bradley Byrne. Thanks for tuning in to Pick and Pod, a production of WFUV Sports.